April the 20th, 2011, Gerwick.net, another special podcast coming at you on a Wednesday night. And tonight we're going to talk current events and all the happenings in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. And to help me out tonight, I have a special guest, Adam Martin from WrestleView.com, the editor. How you doing tonight, Adam?
I'm doing good, Steve. How you doing, man?
We're doing great, and it's a pleasure to have you here, because I know you've had me on your show before, so tonight we'll probably do similar to what we did on your shows. We'll talk about current events. There's all kinds of things going on. So let's kind of start with first thing that popped up this week on, I guess it was Monday, I guess they made the announcement that the draft, the annual draft, is going to come up, and it seems odd to me, Adam, because it's so tough to keep track on who's on which show, but I guess probably this was maybe, I don't know, maybe they went a little bit quicker to this draft than maybe they would have if Edge wouldn't retire, because I think the backstory to this one is they need to find a new babyface to replace Edge on SmackDown. Kind of give me your overall thoughts on the draft going in, and maybe who benefits the most by being drafted, and maybe, you know, is there a prediction or two who you really see maybe switching shows this time around?
Well, the draft thing is interesting, because on the WrestleView Radio Network, we were predicting that I believe at one point they had announced that it was supposed to take place this past Monday, and then they just kind of stayed quiet about it after WrestleMania, because we were kind of, you know, hammering every week when we would talk about the shows, like, well, draft's coming up, you know, and WrestleMania's, you know, as soon as WrestleMania's done, that's going to be the next big thing. And then they stayed very, very quiet about it after WrestleMania. And then, of course, like you mentioned, we get the Edge retirement announcement, and it seemed very, very rushed. I remember there was a couple of people, you know, describing it as them being in panic mode and, you know, the, oh, my God, they got to hurry up and do something. And we found that kind of humorous on WrestleView. But, you know, the thing about that show is it's always a fun show. I want to say this will be the first time in a long time that they're going to be doing this on a two-hour show, because normally they keep it for a three-hour Raw, which I kind of assumed, well, since, you know, before the announcement, you know, had they not said anything after WrestleMania, my first assumption was, well, they'll probably do it sometime in June, because they have those two back-to-back three-hour Raws coming up, which I can't stand three-hour episodes of Raw in the first place. But
no, me either.
By the time that third hour, you know, comes around, it's just, it's, you know, painful sometimes, because they're just trying to do so much and fill that time. But when you have something like a draft, or you have some kind of a theme like a King of the Ring, or, you know, they did the old school Raw, or just some kind of a theme that gets you through it, it's not too bad. But, you know, the draft thing is interesting, and it's something that, you know, we're going to probably be talking about this week as well, in addition to you here on the podcast. And it's fun to sit back and, you know, kind of look at the rosters and kind of say, well, I think this guy would benefit if he went there, and vice versa. I think one of the things that I hope they do, which, you know, it's one of those things where you assume every year there's got to be that one kind of surprise pick. The biggest complaint we got last year was that, you know, Raw seemed to benefit so much and SmackDown seemed to get the short end of the stick. But what we were always kind of being fed was that, well, the reason they're doing that is because they're, you know, kind of preparing for that switch from broadcast television to cable with Sci-Fi in October of last year, so that once that took place, then they were going to kind of make kind of even things out a little bit. And we didn't really see that. I mean, we saw kind of newer talent get created over on that brand, namely Alberto Del Rio, but we saw some other guys get some chances, like a Cody Rhodes, for example, you know, someone like Drew McIntyre kind of getting a shot, and then kind of, you know, putting Edge in the driver's seat. And now that has come to an end, kind of a surprising, and although he did say he was, you know, going to be retiring in the next year, but not as abruptly as he did. But I'm very intrigued by this year, because it seems like they're kind of top heavy a little bit on Raw, and there's a couple guys that I think could really benefit going to SmackDown. I think the one guy that sticks out to me the most, that would seem to benefit the most going from Raw to SmackDown, would be Sheamus. He just seems kind of ready to go, and kind of maybe given some kind of a, I don't know if he needs to be just thrust right into the main event position, but he'd be somebody that'd be fun to kind of slowly build, maybe as you get in towards, you know, SummerSlam, you know, sometime in the summer, or, you know, maybe sometime towards, you know, the end of the year. But Sheamus stands out, and I know one thing we've been kind of wondering is, are they going to do a move with a big star? And I'm not trying to demean Sheamus, but when I say a big star, kind of a top level main event guy, I've heard some people say, wow, they could stick John Cena over on SmackDown if they're really wanting to kind of keep him fresh going into WrestleMania with the big match with The Rock looming. And some people saying, maybe you stick a Randy Orton over on SmackDown as well. I think, and I don't know about you, Steve, but I feel like more people are talking about who from Raw is going to go to SmackDown, whereas who from SmackDown is going to go to Raw. It just seems kind of Raw so top heavy, and people are so focused on that show that, at least in the discussions I've been in, it's mainly more people talking about, well, I want to see this guy and this guy from Raw go to SmackDown versus, well, I'd really like to see this SmackDown guy get put on Raw, maybe with the exception of a Del Rio, but. And I don't know if you've heard the same thing, but it sounds like more people are intrigued of, well, I want to see a couple guys from Raw go to SmackDown, and I don't really think people are thinking too hardly about guys from SmackDown going to the Monday show.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think this is being precipitated, and I think this has been moved up. I would agree. I got the same impression, Adam, when I heard that they were going to do the back-to-back three-hour Raws in June, that was probably the initial plan was to hold off the draft until June, because I don't see much difference between doing the draft now and doing the draft in June. And it would seem to make more sense to do a draft show in 3 hours, because otherwise you're going to have, unless they come up with some kind of King of the Ring or something again, you're going to have two really generic Raws again that'll be 3 hours and 3 hours to fill up again. And some weeks they have trouble filling up 2 hours of Raw. So, but I would agree that the definitely the buzz right now would be, who's going to take Edge's spot on SmackDown? Who's going to be like one of the top baby faces on the show? Because if you look at the SmackDown side, it's very weak in terms of baby faces. And the names that would jump out at you as obvious replacements, if they wanted to do, as you said, the major shock, the major name would be either Cena or Orton being switched from Raw to SmackDown. And I have a hard time picturing either one of those guys being drafted to the SmackDown side, but if they are, the knee-jerk reaction is we got to replace Edge, then, if you don't do Orton or if you don't do Cena, there's no other real top baby faces on the Raw side. Another guy that kind of came to mind when you were talking about Sheamus maybe benefiting would be a John Morrison going over. But now John Morrison is getting the opportunity at the Extreme Rules pay-per-view. So I think if they don't do Cena or Orton, then this draft could kind of be a letdown, because I don't see another major player, coming into replacing Edge's role on SmackDown. So if it's not one of those two guys, then I don't know who it's going to be, Adam.
No, yeah, the Cena thing's interesting, because we were talking about this week and how he's been there since, I want to say I had it correct in saying, since 2005. He had been on SmackDown for basically the start of his career up until that point. And he's been on Mondays for a lot longer than, some people might remember. And there's been, times where he's missed television because of, injuries and things like that. But he's been kind of the he's been the focal point of Monday Night Raw for, well over 5 years now. So it's kind of almost, I compare it to the Triple H move they made in 2008 when he was moved to SmackDown, and a lot of people said, oh, there's just no way he's going to go to SmackDown, and that's never going to happen. And then they went ahead and did it. And granted, he stayed there for a year. He didn't stay there for too long, but he gave it a year. And it wasn't, it wasn't that bad. I mean, it gave that show kind of a fresh feel to it, to have some new blood over there. And I know a lot of people, complain that, in the last couple months they haven't really, stuck with the split brand format, because, anytime from about January to April, if you're expecting them to be, very, tight knit to the brand extension thing, then obviously you're not a regular viewer of WWE television, because they obviously like to mix the talent a lot between January and April. And there's always that kind of hangover effect after WrestleMania where they still have people sticking around and doing stuff. But the Cena thing, I think, would be huge. I think, as much of a risk as it is, I think it would be something that would really kind of freshen up both shows, just because, you know, we know his you know, he's set for his WrestleMania match, and it would be nice to have him, you know, work with some different talent. Or, I mean, the problem is that, you know, you have the risk of him working with someone he's worked with before. It's just maybe he hasn't for a couple years. I know Hunter Golden brought up the fact that he's never worked with Kane before, which is crazy. You would think at some point those guys would have crossed paths, but they haven't. So that might be something. I mean, I'm not saying that's something they're going to do, but you're right in thinking, you know, Cena or Orton. I mean, Orton's a guy that, you know, yeah, he's been in the top position. I don't know if I really consider him a guy that has been overly successful as champion. I was not very overly impressed with his last run as WWE champion last year. It was very awkward at times. But we'll see what they do. I think that's the most intriguing thing, is it gets people talking, it gets people discussing, and, you know, there's some genuine interest into the show next week. So I think they'll be back live again, and I think it'll be a fun time, and hopefully we get, you know, a couple decent picks. It's only a two-hour show, and from what I remember, they always would do these shows for the three-hour shows just to sneak as many picks as they can in there. But I'm really looking forward to it. I think it'll be a fun time.
You know, another thing I was thinking about, too, when they announced the draft before the pay-per-view on Sunday, what they could do is draft Cena to SmackDown, which would mean if he would win the title at the pay-per-view, he could take the WWE title to SmackDown, and then they could draft Del Rio to Raw, and if he would happen to win the title, or I guess they could do Christian as well. If one of those two guys end up with the title, they could switch the title. I believe they've done that before where they've switched the championships all together. So that was another scenario I thought when they announced the draft 6 days before a pay-per-view, is that you could see the championships change sides, which I think it would be something interesting again to see the world title back on Raw and then the WWE championship on SmackDown. At least it'd be something different, because we've seen a very stagnant product over the last, I don't know, what, year or two with WWE.
I kind of disagree. I mean, I think that I thought Raw has been very intriguing. I think SmackDown, with the exception of the Edge and Kane feud, I thought that was just borderline awful television.
Yes.
But I thought a lot of the stuff they were doing on SmackDown with Del Rio was very, very, very good television. You know, for the most part, I thought Raw from June up till now has been pretty good. You know, with the kickoff of the Nexus angle, and I was one of the people who I really enjoyed the Nexus stuff, and I know some people got all, you know, crazy over how they handled the John Cena thing with him being fired and stuff like that. And yes, it was kind of goofy, but I think a lot of the times people forget that this is a television show first and foremost, and they kind of have this knack of analyzing wrestling like it's a sport. And that's one thing that we usually tried to not do when we analyze the shows on WrestleView is, you know, this isn't a sport. This is a television show that millions of people tune into every week. And maybe it's not your cup of tea, and that I think where people get themselves in trouble, Steve, is that they fantasy book in their heads. And when it doesn't happen the way they want it to, then therefore the show's stupid and it's boring. But at the same time, you kind of have to go along for the ride, just the way you would if you bought a ticket to go see a movie, or if you're into a television show that, granted, might be only airing for a couple weeks and then there's a break. But that's where wrestling is kind of more cyclical, in that it's, you know, it's every single week and there's never a break, and you're constantly in the mode of things. So your level of patience might be a little bit more thin, or your standards might be just so high that it's hard for them to knock it out of the park every week, which I don't expect them to do. Like, you know, they had kind of a rough show this past week in London. You know, I feel like I thought the television product, actually, I've never had more fun watching the WWE. I'm really enjoying the new direction, kind of getting away from the Attitude Era stuff. I think that was one of the smartest decisions they could have ever made, is getting away from that, you know, Jerry Springer kind of television. I'm seeing it when I go to the live shows, seeing more families come out. It's kind of turning into the product that I grew up with as a kid, and I don't mind it, but people that maybe started watching pro wrestling in 1998 and 1999, they don't understand this, and they're watching and going, well, what is this? Why are they doing this? And I can understand their confusion and their frustration, but, you know, that's – and when it comes down to it, to bottom line it, you see where the WWE has still remained successful. I mean, they had one of the most profitable years in company history in 2010. I believe the total was over $400 million in revenue. They didn't do that in the Attitude Era. And they're extremely successful right now. And you can see the difference in when you present a product the way they do, changing with the times, whereas you see a product like TNA that's trying to basically be a bad parody of what pro wrestling was like in the Attitude Era. And you can see it in the television ratings and the buy rates. It's not a successful form of pro wrestling to be presenting to the masses. It's not mainstream to be trying to do what they were doing 10 years ago, because people turn around and go, well, I've already seen this. You know, I've already seen this, you know, NWO, WCW, Nitro kind of stuff. I'm not into this, and why would I sit here and watch this? So I think that's where you're seeing a definite trend and a different change in the pro wrestling viewing audience. And I don't know if you've picked up that vibe, if you've gone to any live shows yourself, but I can truly see it now. And, at first I was a little hesitant to adapt to it, but the more I see it going into play and the more successful they've become doing this move. I mean, how can you not say the move was successful? And you might disagree with the change. You may not personally like it, but you can't tell me, and you can't sit there and tell me that it's not been successful, because the, you know, money doesn't lie and numbers don't lie.
No, it's always funny too when, you know, people want to say that TNA, you know, they make the comparison to TNA and WWE, and it's just like they're not even on the same map, as you said, with the revenues. That, no, I mean, from a business perspective, WWE is definitely the king. They are the number one promotion. They found other revenue streams. They're international. I mean, they still have what, NXT and Superstars, even though they're off American television, they still produce those overseas. You see, when they go overseas, their tours are always very successful. So no, from a business standpoint, I don't argue that at all. I find Raw kind of hit and miss. There's some weeks where I kind of like it, and there's other weeks where I just scratch my head and I kind of wonder where they're going. You brought up the Nexus angle, and I think that's probably a prime example. I was really excited about the Nexus angle. It was something different. It was creative. You know, someone wanted to compare it to NWO. I mean, if you wanted to call it the Invasion angle, whatever you wanted to call it. But I thought within a couple months, they really just ruined that angle by SummerSlam, they really just kind of buried Nexus. And as you see now, Nexus isn't even really a strong group at all. And, you know, Wade Barrett, who was the leader of the group, ended up kind of second fiddle on SmackDown. I just thought that was an angle. They could have made huge stars with that group. And now I just don't see the star power they had. I thought all those guys were the main event of SummerSlam. And now, what, 6 months, 8 months later, some of them are back to developmental, and some of them are on SmackDown. There was a week where, really for no reason, the angle they did with Rock and Cena, where they set up WrestleMania for next year, the core comes out for no reason other than to get beat up. And I'm just thinking, I mean, these guys, at one point, I thought they were like the next big thing in wrestling. It was cool. It was innovative. And then, I don't know, within a couple months, to me, it just really got old head, and I think they're like Nexus right now is kind of an afterthought.
Yeah, I mean, I think they handled the start of it extremely well. And one of the things I noticed about it was just genuine interest. And at a time when I think a lot of people were starting to feel Raw was getting kind of stale, and it's always like, this is always that dangerous time of the year, Steve, where you're done with WrestleMania. I don't want to say they go into autopilot, but they're definitely in a different train of thought until, you know, SummerSlam rolls around. The next couple months, you know, I would say from after WrestleMania, so part of April, all of May, all of June, all of July, maybe kind of towards the end of July, things, you're starting to see a little bit of a pattern of something getting going. But this is kind of that's that notorious downtime. This is, if anybody ever, you know, goes, well, what part of WWE are you not a big fan of? It's this time of the year, because they do things that maybe they normally wouldn't do, because there's kind of less eyeballs watching the show. You know, people aren't in school anymore. You know, schedules change. They're not sitting at home on Monday nights or in the summertime when, you know, they're out doing stuff with people. So unless you're, you know, over the age of, you know, 25, and you might have a full-time job, and that kind of, you know, mentality doesn't apply to you. But obviously, they've switched the demographics, they've changed the demographics, and that's the people they're still aiming at, and that's when things change. But the Nexus thing was interesting in that it kicked off. It started off very, very strong. I thought they did an excellent job with Wade Barrett. I was so impressed with that guy. And then I didn't have an issue with them losing at SummerSlam. I saw a lot of people upset about that, and I kind of was one of the people, I don't really understand why people are upset. I mean, they spent like, what, how many months beating the crap out of John Cena every week? So, I mean, you kind of, if you've watched pro wrestling before, you generally know the story is, you know, the bad guys get the upper hand for a pretty long time. They build that heat, and then they more than likely lose because the good guy prevails, you know. And so I didn't really understand why people were that upset about it and that they thought that, you know, Nexus was going to be killed. And I think what fueled a lot of that too, Steve, was when people saw the reports that they were thinking of ending the group at SummerSlam, which didn't happen. But I think that when people read that report, they started, you know, there's a tendency, and you know exactly what I'm talking about when I say this, that there's a tendency on the Internet, among Internet wrestling fans, to just completely overreact to the point that it's just borderline entertaining, to me at least. The older I've gotten and seeing how people react to stuff, it's just go on WrestleView or go on Gerwick.net and read some of the things that people post after the end of pay-per-view results or after one of your reports, Steve. You know, just seeing how people react to stuff. And they don't just – I mean – I don't know how these people breathe. Like they're just like, oh my God, like they can't help themselves. They have to, you know, give a reaction and just be so upset. And like, I would hate to live my life that way of just being upset all the time. And I wanted to say to these people, calm down, take a breath. You know, I understand maybe this isn't what you wanted to see, but that doesn't qualify it for being stupid just because you think it's stupid. And I saw that when the Nexus lost at SummerSlam, and I was sitting there going, calm down, you know, we don't know if they're done with it, just wait. And they weren't done with it, they still went with it. I wasn't a huge fan of the John Cena getting fired angle and then him showing up, and I thought that was very, very goofy stuff. I wasn't a big fan of that. And another thing I wasn't a big fan of either was repackaging the group. I mean, it sounded really cool with CM Punk and when they did it in December, but they were kind of like a backdrop to build Punk and Orton. I mean, I feel like they needed that there to, you know, build up that feud. I just feel like that creative team goes, well, we don't really know how we want to do this, but if we have Punk, you know, rebrand this group and lead it, and then we just have Orton, you know, kick these guys in the head every other week, and maybe that'll work out nicely. And then here we go again on Monday. I thought that was so random, you know, to have these guys back all over again. I mean, granted, they returned the week before, but the whole allure of the Nexus thing to me is just so uninteresting. And I got to say, the stuff they're doing with the Core and SmackDown is even worse. I mean,
yes.
I mean, they're killing those guys. I mean, yep. Wade Barrett went from a guy who I thought had so much potential. I still think he does. And I guess I can't kill the guy for being told what to do. But that whole concept of the Core and it's just so disappointing to see where it started and where it's at right now and where you see everybody at. And I think that's what I'm the most disappointed about is that it started, it had a lot of people talking. I mean, I saw it, and I mean, I'm sure you saw it too. I mean, our traffic had never been that high in the history of WrestleView in the summertime when that Nexus angle went down. I mean, it was crazy. I remember you telling me that you were having issues with your website crashing because there were so many people coming to Gerwick.net.
Right.
And it was it created a lot of buzz, but I think you made the excellent point there that, you know, it was a really good idea. It was kind of like the NWO thing. Great idea, great concept, but where's your end game? And they didn't have that in WCW, and, you know, it didn't look like, and it still doesn't look like they had that in mind in the WWE at the Nexus.
That's a great comparison, NWO, and how it went on forever, it seemed like, and they didn't know when to pull the plug on it. We had watered-down versions of the group, LWO, and then there was NWO Wolfpack, and it was just it was getting so watered down. They were just trying to keep it, and it was NWO 2000, all kinds of things they were trying to do with it. It obviously went on for way too long. This one just went on way too short. I thought they had something with that angle. I think they should have won at SummerSlam because they could say, hey, they won, they beat some of the top stars on the number two pay-per-view of the year. And, to me, Adam, they just need to create new stars. I mean, when we talk about the draft and you're talking about a big name, it's like, well, how many big names do they really have anymore? I mean, if you really stop and think about it, we've seen John Cena and Randy Orton in so many main events. I mean, those are the two names that, like, pop in my head immediately. You've got, you know, Undertaker, who's basically a part-time worker now. Triple H is basically a part-time worker now. CM Punk is sometimes a main eventer when they're pushing him that way. And then you go beyond that, and you have, you know, Rey Mysterio was a world champion for a time, but I don't know. It's like they really need to create some new stars now, and I just thought when they had the Nexus group so hot and so strong, that was a time to really make some new stars. And it just seems like, you know, after, yeah, they kept the angle going after SummerSlam, but they had really lost a lot of credibility after they didn't win that match, and then they did the angle with John Cena, which I never quite understood what the point of that one really was. But I don't know, Adam, no matter what they do with this draft and how things, you know, play out, and obviously we expect there'll be some cuts after the draft, as there always are. They really, between now and really going into WrestleMania next year, really need to create some new stars. And if it's not in the Nexus group, it's not in the core, you know, it's got to come from somewhere, because, you know, we've talked about it for so long. You know, HBK is not going to be there forever. Now he's not. You got Edge. He's not going to be there. They thought maybe he'd be there for 5 more years. They were hoping for that. You know, he's gone now. And, you know, you're always one injury away from really looking on the short end of the stick. So, I don't know, Adam, as you kind of, you know, look things over and see the draft and maybe, you know, look to the farm at FCW, I don't know, in your mind, who do you see maybe rising now? Because it seems like this has got to be a period when somebody gets a push that maybe we're not seeing currently. Somebody's got to step up to the plate, or somebody's really got to get a push. I thought maybe at one time Dolph Ziggler was heading in that direction, and then I saw on Monday night, he looked like Evan Bourne to me. So I don't know where they're going with some of the young talent they have.
Well, I think they did create a lot of – I mean, I think we forget often, because I go back to what I said earlier, that this is a show that we are so used to watching every week that sometimes we forget what we're watching because we're so focused on what's happening this week. Because it's a very – I mean, that's something I do love about the wrestling business, is that we don't have that break that you get with sports where you're a couple months off and you're having to go on to something else. I mean, that's one beautiful thing about pro wrestling, is that it just continues on and on and on and never takes a break. But I think we often forget at the time, though, who they did create in the last year and who they did kind of say, listen, we're going to give this guy a shot. I mean, look at, like, just for instance, we were talking about the Nexus guys. I mean, look at all these, you know, I mean, they were developmental guys. I mean, yes, they were on the NXT show, but, you know, for all intents and purposes, they were, you know, developmental guys who didn't have a lot of experience, and they gave them a platform to perform, and I thought they did a pretty excellent job. I think, you know, Alberto Del Rio, I mean, the guy's not new to pro wrestling, but he's definitely new to the United States scene. They gave him a huge opportunity on SmackDown. He ran with that ball. You speak of Brodus Clay, who's been hanging around with Del Rio, another guy who I think has tremendous potential in the company. And then you go back and then you look at some of the other guys that have been there for a little bit. I mean, I guess one guy who was kind of off and on and was Daniel Bryan. He's been given a very big opportunity. And, you know, a lot of the people who watched him in Ring of Honor are so upset with the way he's being booked in the WWE. But I think what a lot of people forget, Steve, is that when you sign a contract with this company, you are playing a part that they think that they have a role for. It's not the other way around. They're not viewing him as the, oh, my God, he had 10-star, million-star matches every week, according to Dave Meltzer, and right, this is why we want this guy. They're bringing the guy in because they think, well, okay, he's very athletic. We think there's a spot for him on our roster, on our television show, that we think we can work with this guy. And I think this is where that blurring the line drives me nuts about pro wrestling, is that I give Ring of Honor credit for booking themselves like a sport to distinguish themselves from the other two promotions. But the problem with doing that is that you're then ingraining in people's heads that pro wrestling is a sport. It's not a sport. It's entertainment. And as much as people want this to be a sport, it never has been, and it never will be. And if you view it like a sport, it's gonna. I mean, you're ruining the pro wrestling experience by looking at it like a sport. I mean, I love mixed martial arts. That's where I get my sports fix. I'm a big football fan. That's where I get my sports fix. I'm not watching pro wrestling because I think it's a sport. I'm watching it because it's entertaining to me. There's a bunch of characters. It's a bunch of goofy characters. There's fun storylines. But it has a form of athleticism in it. But I don't take it seriously. I don't view it as a sport. And I think that's where people get all hung up on the Daniel Bryan thing, is that he's not being used the way he was in Ring of Honor. And people need to just get over that. They need to get over it or just not watch the show, because I'm sick of seeing the same opinion about it. It just drives me nuts. But again, Daniel Bryan's another guy who got a really, really good shot. Sheamus is another guy who's been given a huge opportunity the last year or two. Jack Swagger, Drew McIntyre, Cody Rhodes. I mean, there's been a lot of talent that they've kind of elevated kind of quietly, but they've done it, and I think that some people, like you said, are so fixated on the, well, Shawn Michaels is gone and Batista's gone and now Triple H is going to be very, very part-time now. The Undertaker's extremely part-time, you know, and these guys that were there, kind of the veterans on the roster, are leaving. But, any company that goes through this is going to have growing pains. And we're in the growing pains phase. And maybe it's going to take, you know, another year or two to get out of this. But, you know, every company goes through this where they hit a successful patch, things go well for a couple years, and then something happens where you got to change with the times. Not everybody's going to like it. We've had situations on WrestleView where we've had, you know, people on staff and they got to move on with their lives. They can't do it anymore. We got to say, okay, we adjust, we replace, and we move on. But some people fear change. And I think that's a lot of the hesitation to the WWE product right now. It's, oh, I'm not used to this, and they fear change a lot. And I truly feel like they've handled the rosters quite well. Could have been better, absolutely, but they've built a lot of stars right around us. We may just not be paying attention as closely as we want to, but that's where I see the draft being, just going back to your question, that's why I see that being so intriguing next week, is that they have a really good opportunity to mix and match a lot up, because I think that once they get past this draft, they are going to go back to really sticking to their guns of, okay, you can only see this guy in this show and you can only see this guy in that show, which is kind of why I think it would be just really, really intriguing if Cena makes that jump. I don't know why he's the guy I keep going back to, Steve, but he's the guy that I just feel like if they're going to make an impact with this thing and really make this thing feel special, he's the guy that can move. They could do it with The Undertaker, you know, if they have any plans with him. I mean, I know he's really banged up, so that's very iffy. But I just feel like Cena's the guy that when you're really sitting down and you're looking at the rosters and you're losing a guy like Edge and where can you mix and match, and Cena just kind of starting fresh and having people to work with before he focuses in on The Rock, I think would be very, very good television.
You know, it's interesting. You know, the John Cena thing is like a heat magnet on internet sites. We get, I don't know, Adam, he's so polarizing. Either you really love John Cena or you really hate him. So I think there's an element out there or a sentiment that if you're not a big John Cena fan, you'd love to see him go to SmackDown and get him off the Raw show. But on the flip side, I don't know. I can't really I just can't envision, you know, Cena being taken off of Raw, the main show. Especially, this is going to be a year they need to obviously build up the program with The Rock. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out, since they booked the match 1 year in advance. And maybe part of the reason they're doing the draft this coming week instead of the next week is because the Rock is going to be in Miami for a live Raw broadcast. So that might be, you know, obviously not going to do the draft while The Rock is there, although I guess you could have. I mean, The Rock's been back a few times now anyways, but I guess we'll just have to wait and see how it plays out. But there, like I said, John Cena is such a polarizing character. I just think there are so many people that just want to see him leave to get him off the main show that maybe they're not thinking what's in the best interest of the company. They just want to see John Cena off from Raw. And just, I don't know, John Cena just seems so stale to me. I mean, he's a guy that I think they, you know, I personally like the guy, but at times he gets very stale to me, that he's had the same persona for so long, that, you know, his character screamed of a heel turn for so long. They've always been resistant to do that. And
I don't think they need to, though. That's a very – I'm glad you brought that up, because I hear that a lot, too, of, oh, he needs to turn heel. But, you know, okay, let's say starting next Monday, Steve, they turn John Cena heel. In 6 months, the people that were complaining to you on Gerwick, filling out the little post where you put up a post and they're going, oh, Steve, oh, and they're yelling at you via the little message there, those same people are going to be complaining, oh, well, John Cena's boring now. You just can't book for those people, because you're trying to please an audience that is unpleasable. I'm doing a Bushism here, but it's unpleasable audience, in that they just can't be – I just feel like those people, like, Doug Lackey has joked on our shows that they're not happy people. They have to be upset about something. And I understand why John Cena is not everybody's cup of tea. I'm not here to argue that. I'm saying if you embrace him as the modern day Hulk Hogan, if you embrace him as the central figure of the show, then you won't be, you know, in such a bad mood. I mean, if you just embrace it and move on, it's not going to be a thorn in your side. But if you're watching the show hoping that John Cena, you know, turns heel and oh, I hate this guy. Again, I go back to what I said earlier. Why live your life that way? Why watch a TV show that way? I mean, how can you? I mean, no one can be that angry all the time. And I don't know if it's just because I'm getting older and I'm getting much more relaxed in terms of giving my opinions about stuff. I think it's a very, as you tend to, and I don't know if you can relate to this or not, but I noticed in the last 2-3 years, I'm definitely watching pro wrestling much more different than I was maybe 10 years ago. If I sat down and had a conversation with Adam from 10 years ago, I'd be having a completely different opinion. Right now I would be looking at myself going, God, you know, really, Adam? And I mean, I was all about, oh, I love, you know, ECW, and ECW was the most amazing thing ever, and I love the hardcore wrestling and the bloods and the weapons, and, you know, and then as I got older, I went, wow, that stuff was actually not very good, and that it was fine for a short period of time, but in the long term, it's not successful, it's never been successful, and it never will be successful, and anybody that tells you it's successful is someone kidding themselves, and I feel like people view John Cena that way, that he is the guy that came along. I feel like it's just kind of the Attitude Era people, though. I mean, there is the people who were watching before the Attitude Era, but I seem to hear it more. I like to call them John Cena boo-birds or the Attitude Era boo-birds, who just have stuck around hoping that something will happen, that he'll turn heel or they'll do something with that character. If you just sit back, like I said before, take a breath, and embrace him as the Hulk Hogan of this era, it'll be fine. You may not like it, but you'll watch the show. I guarantee you'll watch that show a lot more different if you just say, you know what, he's the central focus of this show. He will be at least for the foreseeable future, unless something happens that drastically alters that plan. Once you embrace that, you'll watch it differently. Until you don't, you're going to be, you know, throwing stuff at your TV every week, which is an awful way to watch pro wrestling.
Yeah, that's for sure. I want to get your opinion, Adam. We've got, of course, Tough Enough currently going on. This is the 5th season. They brought that back. You know, of course, noted the decline a little bit in viewership. And as well, we had Raw slip this week down to a 3.1 overall. I guess, you know, you had to anticipate after WrestleMania, the number is going to go down. Obviously, there's such a great buzz for WrestleMania, and then in the weeks following, there's going to be a little bit of a lull, as you know, people kind of, as you said, spring break's over. A lot of years, Easter break's already over. This year, Easter is a little bit later. But the rating has declined a little bit. I mean, it's not to the point where you panic and you just kind of scratch your head, but at the same time, a 3.1 is a little disappointing for Raw, although, again, this week we saw that Raw was pre-taped in London. And, of course, you know, those that follow WrestleView and Gerwick.net obviously could have got the results ahead of time. But do you think this week's rating was drastically hurt because of it was pre-taped? Or what was your opinion this week with Raw and maybe why the number has steadily declined a little bit over the last few weeks?
Well, it's funny because – well, two things that I want to say. First thing is that I don't know why it is, and we like to think we're in the minority, but I'm starting to really rethink that position I've always taken. I don't know if you did the same, but in 2004, when the buzz started to spread that Brock Lesnar was leaving the WWE, and that was only a story you could see on the internet. You weren't seeing that anywhere else. I mean, eventually some mainstream outlets started to pick it up a little bit. I remember Fox Sportsnet was the first one I remember picking it up. Actually, it was funny. It was right at the moment a show I used to do called Wrestling News Live. The host, Trey and JSK, JSK passed away actually 2 years or a couple years after this happened. They had the opportunity to interview Jim Ross to talk about WrestleMania. It was one of those quick media blasts that a lot of guys do where you only have them for 15 or 20 minutes tops, and there's somebody listening on the other line from the WWE, and they were the first people to interview Jim Ross that morning. He was going to do about 10 or 15 interviews. And they asked him right away. They said, listen, there's a story on Fox Sports Net. They weren't going to say, listen, there's reports on the Internet. They said there's an actual legitimate mainstream news source bringing this up, that Brock's going to be leaving. And Ross, and right when they asked the question, somebody from the WWE chimed in and goes, we're not here to talk about that. And thankfully, Jim Ross said, well, I'm not going to dodge your question. All I can tell you is that we're going to cross that bridge when we get there. We're aware of the reports, and he did address it. But I remember watching WrestleMania 20 and hearing the Madison Square Garden crowd do the na-na-na-na, hey-hey, goodbye song to Brock Lesnar. I'm thinking, well, wait a second. And this was 2004, Steve. I mean, this is a long time ago. And we're thinking, and it's always been kind of ingrained in my head, well, the Internet crowd is such a minority. It's such a small percentage compared to the people who come to the shows and maybe watch the shows and stuff like that. But as the Internet has grown and technology has grown and people are accessing Gerwick.net and WrestleView.com on their smartphones and they're you know, subscribing to RSS feeds and they're listening to podcasts like this, news travels a lot faster than it used to. I mean, I started doing this in 1997. You were doing it as long, if not longer, than I was. Gerwick.net was a mainstay when I first started jumping into doing this stuff. And I remember thinking, wow, this is so cool, but not everybody was paying attention. I mean, traffic was insane in that era, but you compare that traffic to what some people are getting now, it was chump change. So news travels a lot faster now. And the point I'm trying to make is that, you know, we feel like we're in this minority of, oh, we're the only people who pay attention to these ratings and these numbers, but it just so happens, and I've really seen, I'm sure, and you actually have, one of the things I love about your website is that you have a timeline of all the ratings from, what do you have it up to,
98.
And if people don't believe me, go on Gerwick.net as you're listening to the podcast right now, go to the TV rating section, and I don't know if you've ever categorized it by when a show is pre-taped, but I think it'd be interesting to go in there in your archives and pull out the shows that were pre-taped, that were overseas, and kind of compare and contrast those numbers, because I think what you're going to see, and it's something I've recall seeing on more than one occasion the last 2 years, is that the rating does drop when it is pre-taped. And I've always wanted to say, well, I can't sit here and say that everybody's jumping on there reading the spoilers, but you kind of can't escape the correlation there, Steve, that when it is taped, the rating plummets. When it's live, it goes back up. You know, we'll see where it's at next week in terms of the draft, and that's going to be a big deal. I'm sure they'll pop a nice rating for that. The flip side of that argument, though, is that the Nielsen Media Research system, which if I didn't say this, I'm sure Doug Lackey's going to listen to this. He would hate me if I didn't bring this up. But he's pointed out many times on our network that it's a very flawed system, and I wish that's a system they could change, they could update. I loved, if you have DirecTV, they have an option where you can click over and see the top five most watched news shows on 24/7 cable networks. So if you switch over at about 8 o'clock, you'll see that you know, Bill O'Reilly and Hannity and Rachel Maddow and Anderson Cooper, you'll see how many people are watching the shows or how those shows rank. You'll see it in sports with whatever sport happens to be on at the time. And you'll see it with WWE and TNA. As much as I am not a fan of TNA, that show's always in the top five on Thursdays on DirecTV. It surprises the hell out of me when I see it there. I'm thinking, wow, this many people are tuning in the show. But I just feel like we're at a point, Steve, that you would think the technology, with how much it has advanced, we'd be able to track these numbers a little bit better than we have. And we're still using the same system that they were using 10, 12 years ago. And that's why when people come to me and say, man, so many more people used to watch Raw in 1999, 2000 compared to now. And I say, well, hold on, pump the brakes there. There are way more televisions in people's homes now than there were 10, 12 years ago. So a 6.4 rating in 1999 or 2000 is like a 3.6 today. It's literally on the same timeline. People just aren't used to seeing it that way because it's very – people look at the ratings very black and white. You understand what I'm saying when I say that because you've been paying attention for the entire time you've run Gerwick.net, the Nielsen Media Research, how it's gathered. So you know what I'm talking about when I say a 6.4 in 99 is equal to that of what it is now in 2011. But most people don't see it that way. They see it black and white. they just see, well, that number was high, that number was low, therefore that means 3 million less people are watching now, which is totally not true. It's the same, it's literally the same amount of audience. It's just categorized differently because there's more televisions, more homes now, there's DVRs to worry about, and there's different ways to calculate it. But I have to think that more people are truly looking at spoilers, because why else would people just say, eh, I'm not going to watch this all of a sudden? You know, I mean, word has got to get out that the show is pre-taped. People go crazy. I'm sure you see it. People going crazy on Twitter when Raw's on. People having conversations, and you see trending topics come up on Twitter. I just got to feel like at the point we're at now with how much technology has advanced, to say that the internet wrestling community is a minority, I just can't buy it anymore, because you're seeing correlations with television ratings. You're seeing how much faster news travels. It just doesn't add up to me anymore to go along with that statement.
I agree with you, especially when they're – if you watch WWE, they're always pushing, follow us on Twitter, follow us on Facebook. So yeah, I definitely agree with that assessment. For a minute there, you were scaring me. I thought maybe you were going to use the Nielsen conspiracy, where I've never known anybody had a Nielsen box.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the thing is that there's like how many – there's like 30,000 homes that have the Nielsen box. And I remember that argument. I actually looked it up one time. I Googled
that was
it.
That was back in the Monday Night Wars when one side was losing. They'd say, I don't know, Adam. I don't have a box. Nobody that I know has a box. How do you know these are fair ratings?
I know. And it's really tricky how it's kind of I'm trying to remember the measuring tool they use in radio. When I used to intern in radio, and I learned a lot about this when I was interning at a radio station in Cedar Rapids here. I forgot the name of the system. It's escaping my mind, but it's you're basically picked the way the people who have Nielsen media research boxes are picked, where they pick you. You're supposed to track your listening habits to the radio, and that's how they configure ratings.
Arbitron ratings.
Yeah, the Arbitron. There you go. That's the name of it. And it's the goofiest way. It's like saying, well, you know, I mean, I'm trying to think of like a comparison of like, I mean, it just, maybe I don't need a comparison. It just sounds goofy to say, well, because you could lie. You could say, well, I listened to, you know, so-and-so when you were really listening to the Gerwick podcast, you know, and you could have just been lying to somebody about it. And the Nielsen Media Research, there's only about 35,000. It's steadily gone up. I think it's the number is closer to 40,000 now in an article I just read. But the people who have it, you would just think with how advanced our technology is and how more people are watching stuff on the internet, there would be a more accurate way of measuring how many people are watching Raw every week. But here we are, we're still using the same thing that they were using 12 years ago to compete in the Monday Night War era. I think it's so goofy that we're still using that, but it's until somebody can think of another way to measure it. I mean, the only thing I can think of is the DirecTV, you know, example I gave you. I'm like, well, if DirecTV can do that, why can't, you know, cable television providers do that? And why can't – there has to be some way of measuring where, you know, eyeballs are watching, and if it can measure how many people are on a certain channel. Because actually, I remember reading an article where Fox News referenced the DirecTV feature, saying, you know, we do this in our ratings, but here's also another example of why people are watching Fox News, because if you – and they were taking screenshots of the DirecTV thing. And I'm thinking, well, that's a great way of showing people – how well you're doing in television ratings, but for some reason we're still using the same old format that they were using 12 years ago. So I just think it's very goofy. I hope we come up with something a little bit more innovative than, you know, relying on a really old form of technology.
Or another group that pops up and says, hey, we can measure the ratings a little more accurately. I mean, that's always, you know, competition is great. You know, if somebody says, hey, we'll be the new Nielsen, and they become the industry standard for measuring television shows. That's another thing, too. When we hear it takes so long to get pay-per-view buy rates, mm-hmm. when, like, the next day they know exactly how many buys. I mean, they just go – I mean, like DirecTV or Comcast, they just look into their system. They see them exactly how many buy. I mean, usually boxing pay-per-views know the next day a pretty good gauge of how many people ordered the show.
Yeah,
and sometimes I hear the same thing with UFC. A lot of times the day after, they have a pretty good idea. They have at least have a ballpark range where they're going to be. Yet a lot of times with these wrestling numbers, it's so delayed. And of course with TNA, you probably know why we don't get the numbers for TNA. But
yeah, they keep them pretty close to the chest because they don't want to be embarrassed.
They should know, like Monday morning, they should have a pretty good idea how many people ordered the show.
I mean, I kind of wonder too, had the WWE not gone public, if we would. if we would have the access that we do now to the buy rates that we get on a quarterly basis when they do the, you know, the they release the financial statements and the conference calls and they issue the big press release and we get the detailed breakdowns of how it did this year versus last year. And I think that's another interesting thing. I mean, people, I mean, we always got buy rates for the big shows, but the B shows, I think, I kind of wonder if they would be releasing information like that or would want to.
I would doubt it. Yeah, I would doubt it. I would think unless they have a really impressive number, they obviously wouldn't put a press release out to say Extreme Rules was 150,000 domestic or something like that. You know, something.
Absolutely, because they don't want that stuff getting out there.
Yeah, exactly. So let's do a couple of TNA tidbits here as we record this on Wednesday night. Kurt Angle got a little bit of a slap on the wrist for his reckless driving arrest, and it's been a very interesting time for Kurt Angle. Of course, he had the whole thing with Twitter right after WrestleMania put up that somebody in WWE was using his moves, and then he later recanted and said, no, I didn't really say that, or my account was hacked, and then you know, we see this all over again with this week. He was doing the same things with Twitter and kind of getting into a little bit with the RKO with Randy Orton. And I guess it goes back to what you were saying, how accessible knowledge is or the social media out there is just a great way in some aspects to drive news, but it can make some people look very embarrassed. And, of course, you got Kurt Angle. I know you've on your Twitter page have talked about the antics of Matt Hardy. I guess overall maybe an impression of, you know, some of the guys that we've seen have some rough periods here with Twitter. And I don't know. To me, with those two cases in particular, you know, we know WWE has their personalities on Twitter, but they've definitely put restrictions on what they can and can't do. And maybe it's time for TNA to put a little bit of kibosh on what the TNA talent can and can't say on social media.
Well, I know there was some kind of an initiative to say don't tweet after midnight, because a lot of the times you would see wrestlers just going out and getting absolutely, you know, drunk, and then, yeah, you know, that's the word. It's, you know, it's kind of like, you know, don't text and you know, don't drink and text, and you'll wake up in the morning. I mean, I'm guilty of it, of going, oh my God, did I text that to that person? And Jesus, and you know, Jesus, you have that sense of embarrassment. But imagine being, like you said, in a position of a Matt Hardy or a Kurt Angle, where you have a lot of people watching you, and you say something stupid and it gets out there. And then the other dangerous thing about it too is that, and this is something that you could definitely relate to, and something I've kind of had to learn to both adapt to and be careful about, is that now that wrestlers are on Twitter, we're getting information spread a lot faster directly from them, which is sometimes a good thing and a bad thing, because sometimes they will, like for instance, you bring up the Kurt Angle thing. When he was arrested in North Dakota, he immediately took to Twitter and said, don't believe anything you read. Don't believe anything that's on the internet. Here's my side of the story, and believe me. And you have one or two reactions to that. You have one reaction of people who are just, you know, diehard wrestling fans of, oh, you know, I don't go to wrestling sites because they, you know, they make things up about wrestlers and they're evil people. And, you know, I'll believe anything you say, Kurt. Those people scare me. Those people, I call those people creepy people, because they'll just, you know, listen and just take in what any wrestler says, and they'll trust them, when the number one thing that pro wrestlers are taught to do is work you every single chance they get. And why you would believe what somebody says, and you know, especially when they're involved in some kind of an incident. I'm not saying if they're just going to go off and say something and I'm saying don't believe what they say, but when an incident like that happens with Kurt Angle, which isn't his first brush with the law. I mean, I love how this guy gets so many passes with the wrestling community, but if this was somebody else, they would be crucifying this guy. But he gets so many. I don't know what it is. Are we supposed to be patriotic and forgive Kurt Angle because he won an Olympic gold medal, and we're supposed to give this guy a bunch of passes? And, you know, I mean, Michael Phelps got killed for smoking marijuana, and here's Kurt Angle getting busted with steroids in his car, stalking his ex-girlfriend with, you know, with pain pills, and then at one point getting arrested again for allegedly driving home intoxicated, and then he gets in trouble again here in North Dakota. And you have police reports, detailed police reports coming out. You have the Associated Press doing a story about it. But we're supposed to take old Kurt at his word, Steve, and, oh, you know, let's listen to what Kurt Angle. That's to me where you have to separate fact from fiction. You are, I mean, how stupid do you have to be to just, you know, listen to this garbage coming out of this guy's mouth? And it's one thing to say, well, I'm a fan and I don't want to associate myself with people that, you know, because we get pegged, Steve, as the guys who benefit from stories like this. But if there wasn't people like us, then all we would be seeing is one side of the story. And that's I don't want to live in a world that is like that. I think that's a strange mentality to have, is that, well, you know, you guys ruin it, and but yet we're giving you another side of the story that, you know, most of the time, I would say more than most of the time, is accurate. But a lot of people just don't want to hear that because they're a big Kurt Angle fan, and they don't want to hear the negativity. And I, you know, people who are fans of the Hardy Boys, I mean, they creep me out to no end. When Jeff Hardy was arrested a couple years ago, and people screaming at me, how dare you put up his mugshot on WrestleView, and you don't know if this is true or not, when I'm literally paraphrasing police reports. And I mean, these people just live on another planet. They're the strangest people, that they can't bring themselves to face reality with these guys, because they put these guys on such a huge pedestal. It's really weird how this happens and why that takes place. And I just, it's one of the things that I don't understand about wrestling. But the Twitter thing is dangerous, and that there's a lot of good to it, and that news gets out a lot faster. Things can be denied faster, as I found out one time with Goldust, who was killing WrestleView one day, which I thought was just, you know, really entertaining.
You had the time with Kevin Nash coming after me because I reported that he was going back to TNA.
And he got mad because he got scooped. He got scooped, yeah. And that's all it was, you know. And then later
it came out that he got released from TNA, and so I was right with my story. So
exactly, you know. And we got killed for that. You got killed. I mean, we're getting emails going, how can you have Steve Gerwick on your staff and do? I mean, you got just annihilated for that, and then it ended up being true. But you never hear those same people go, you know what? I'm sorry for saying that to you. I mean, it'd be one thing if somebody actually emailed back and had the courage to say, you know what, I'm really sorry for writing that on Facebook, on your website. I shouldn't have done that. But we're dealing with, and I hate to say this because it's a business I love, but we're dealing with a lot of interesting people when it comes to pro wrestling. That I hate to say that they're all stupid, you know, dum-dums and stuff, but you know, the more you read the Facebook comments and the more you read stuff on message boards, and you know exactly what I'm talking about, and I don't even have to get into detail when I say the emails we get from people, you know, the level of you know, intelligence, I often question sometimes. I'm often scared that these people exist in everyday life. I'm thinking, man, how does that person exist when it's not that I – that it's one thing to disagree with your opinion, but to approach a conversation intelligently and disagree is fine with me. But to just annihilate somebody for no reason, and it's not just pro wrestling. I mean, you can see it all over the place, on gossip websites and message forums for stars and stuff. But the Twitter thing is, it's both a blessing and a curse. I gave up on following Matt Hardy on Twitter. I just couldn't do it. I tapped out on Matt Hardy. I tapped out on the whole Carolina crew, except for Shane Helms. Shane Helms I can for some reason tolerate because he doesn't get into a lot of that stuff with those guys, but like the Shannon Moores and the Jeff Hardys and the Matt, I just said, sorry guys, I can't. And I'm getting very close with Kurt Angle too, because he's just borderline insane right now. I mean, that's one guy who gets a pass on just every like something will happen. And I like Hunter Golden joked on one of our shows that this guy can murder somebody and people will give him a pass. I don't know what it is about Kurt Angle, but this guy just gets a pass after pass after pass, and I'm just not one of those people who are going to do that. And if I'm a big bad meanie for doing that, then, you know, whatever. But at least I'm approaching this like a logical human being. I'm not being some creepy person that just ignores the facts because he's my favorite wrestler and he does ankle locks and he does flips off, you know, cages. And that's just really creepy, very, very strange mentality to have. At least I think so.
You know, I tend to agree with you. I do think Kurt Angle gets a pass on a lot of it, but I don't know if you're checking out Gerwick.net, but there's been a lot of comments that have been very more of a negative nature towards Kurt, especially with when he was upset that they were using the Olympic Slam or some of his moves at WrestleMania. They were saying, "Hey, you know, Kurt Angle invented the toaster. Kurt Angle invented the television." You know, it's
like there was a whole trending topic on Twitter of things Kurt Angle invented, because he deserved to get made fun of for that, because you can't claim to have invented a wrestling move that existed before he was in the pro wrestling business. I mean, that's why people were like, people were joking that, you know, if you type it up on Twitter, the hashtag Kurt Angle invented, or I forgot what the hashtag was, or things Kurt Angle invented. I mean, people were having a really fun time with it, because it was one of the goofiest things that I've ever read. I'm like, how can you claim to have invented the ankle lock? I mean, that's just because you did it, doesn't mean you have the patent on it. I mean, it's so goofy, you know, that mentality. And then doing the RKO at the lockdown pay-per-view, and stalking Jeff Jarrett like Randy Orton, and then immediately tweeting to Randy Orton, "Hey, I did it because I respect you, not because I was trying to get back at you." And it's so childish and it's so weird. And I don't even pay attention to things he says in interviews anymore, because it's just like to me, he's a crazy person. He's delusional. I mean, he's just, I often joke about Kurt Angle, and I shouldn't, because I think there's something wrong. I think there's something going on there. And kind of how we all had that concern for Matt Hardy for a while there, where we were thinking, man, something's not right with this guy. And Kurt Angle, there's just the lights are on, but no one's home with that guy, because the decisions he makes and the things he says, and I can't imagine anybody taking anything he says seriously, whether it's in an interview or a thing he says on Twitter. I mean, how can you even take this guy at his word when he's blatantly lying to people? I mean, come on. Like, why would you want to, you know, listen to somebody like that? I, you know, and some people do, and, you know, that's their prerogative, I guess. And I'm not going to, though. I think it's weird, but he gets a pass too much. But you're right. He is finally getting some feedback, which is much deserved. I mean, I don't feel bad for the guy. If he's going to go out and say stupid stuff, then he deserves that stupid stuff thrown back at him.
He invented broken ribs now, too.
Invented everything. He invented wrestling boots and the wrestling ring and everything. You know, that whole thing on Twitter was hilarious. But, if you say something stupid, you're ready for people to make fun of you.
And I got to say this, too. You know, he just announced that he's going to re-sign with TNA, or he's working out the paperwork with Dixie Carter. He was not going to go back to WWE. I can't imagine WWE would take him back. And it's obvious that he could never work a full-time schedule with WWE again. So even that, you take that with a grain of salt, because, I mean, I think this is part of the reason that Sting did not go to WWE, because he just can't work at that top level. I mean, can you imagine Sting working that WrestleMania match with Undertaker? I don't think he could physically do it. And sometimes with these interviews, they're a little disingenuous. Just come out and say, hey, TNA's got a great working environment. They got, four or five days a month I have to work. I'm not on the road all the time. I can train. I can eat better. Come out and say that. Don't just say, I thought about WWE, and, I like it so much here in Orlando, Adam. I think I'm just going to stay put here, It's just,
I know. A lot of that stuff is done to get you to, I guess, more or less respond to it. And if, of course, people will have some kind of a reaction to it, and it makes for, a nice little headline to say, "Oh, well, Sting said this about WrestleMania," and that whole thing was goofy too, and that there wasn't even an official back and forth. There was supposedly someone sending a feeler out, not hearing back and moving on, but everybody was just convinced that Sting was the guy in the video packages, and they're booking it, and that was another example of the internet crowd just getting really far ahead of themselves and fantasy booking in their head. And then when it doesn't happen, then, oh, this is the worst television show in the history of television shows. And it's just, my God, just calm down and just watch the show. I mean, you're setting yourself up for failure. I mean, that's not a way to, like I said, I feel like I'm repeating myself a lot, but it's not a way to watch wrestling. It's you're going to ruin wrestling for yourself if you do that all the time. But some people just have to grow up and learn, and that's a part of life.
Before we go, let's do a little bit with mixed martial arts, because I don't really get a chance to talk about it all that much. Obviously, majority of my website is devoted to pro wrestling, but we do cover UFC, Strikeforce, and some of the other groups that are out there. M1 pops up with shows here and there. But I wanted to get your reaction, because there's was kind of a comparison when Zuffa, UFC, purchased Strikeforce, and some people made the comparison. It was like when Vince bought WCW, and I kind of chuckled at that, and I understand the thought is that the number one promotion is buying up the number two promotion. I guess it would be similar to today if WWE would end up buying TNA, but they're just not on the same level. Strikeforce, sure, it was the number two promotion and that they were the strongest number two MMA group, but the comparison to the WWF purchase of WCW just doesn't hold up to me because at one time, WCW really was the number one promotion in the world.
Yeah.
83 weeks in a row, they were beating WWE's butt on Monday night. So I don't see the – I understand why it's one buy-in number two, but at the same time, the dynamics of that purchase is so much different than when Vince bought WCW from Turner in 2001.
Yeah, I didn't. I saw a couple MMA blogs, maybe it was one or two, who made that comparison. And I'm kind of there with you too. I didn't really understand it either, and I was very excited when I heard the news, just because of the fact that the verbiage that Dana White had been using was that they were still planning to allow it to exist, that they weren't just going to shut it down and merge it with the UFC and absorb all these contracts. Because personally, I've been a very, very big fan of Strikeforce. It was much more consistent than the last couple entities we saw before Strikeforce. There was the Elite XC entity, which had a one or two shows in CBS and did some stuff in Showtime, but that didn't last very long. Actually, the death of that show was when Kimbo Slice was supposed to fight Ken Shamrock. Shamrock has the injury. They sub in Seth Petrozelli, who had so much more experience in MMA, and just embarrassed Kimbo in a matter of 10 seconds on CBS. That was the infamous Gus Johnson calling it the most amazing moment in MMA history, and I'm slapping my forehead going, oh, my God, why is Gus Johnson calling mixed martial arts? Why isn't he at a basketball game somewhere?
Or even football.
That is just not a guy who should be anywhere near, covering mixed martial arts. I mean, he's great at basketball. But he needs to stay far away from that. They still use him for some strange reason.
And he's actually rumored to go to the NFL Network. Is a name that popped up for the Thursday night games as well. So.
Well, that's good. He's better in that element. He understands those sports. He doesn't understand mixed martial arts. He has no business being there, and it's kind of scary actually that he was given that opportunity. And I know Gus Johnson fans want to kill me for. I got killed on Twitter for nailing Gus Johnson. I don't hate him as a sports commentator. I just don't think he has anything. He shouldn't be anywhere near covering mixed martial arts because he doesn't understand anything. I mean, calling that the biggest, upset in MMA history, that's just a slap in the face to MMA fans. I mean, anybody who's a true fan of the sport would have heard that one. My God, what an idiot. But there was the Elite XC experiment. What was the promotion before Elite XC? There was unless I'm just thinking of the two because they did shows on CBS and Showtime. I want to say there was Affliction for a while there, which didn't last very long. There was that experiment. And then if you have HDNet, you can see some local shows. Not granted, they're not competing with the UFC, but they made attempts to, kind of be, an alternative of some sort. But I was a big fan of Strikeforce. I would always see the Showtime shows. I actually went to a Strikeforce show 2 years ago when they came to Hoffman Estates, Illinois, which was right outside of Chicago. That was the night that Fedor fought Brett Rogers in the main event. And then Mahan Miller fought Jake Shields on that same card. And that was a hell of a fight, and it was such an experience to be there live. And that was my big worry, was that, oh, are we going to lose this now? Because I love the UFC. They've been putting on more shows, but I do like to see kind of different forms and different fighters, or fighters that maybe kind of lost some steam in the UFC or for whatever reason financially. A guy like Dan Henderson comes to mind, who just financially couldn't come to terms with them, but then was still able to go somewhere else like a Strikeforce and still compete with other top-level talent. So I was excited with the fact. Now, I didn't see the last I didn't actually see the last Strikeforce show. And I know a lot of people were expecting changes. They're still doing the same ramp with the – well, I heard the pyro wasn't there this time. They did away with the pro wrestling pyro, which I always thought was kind of goofy at an MMA show, although UFC did that in the very early days too. They had pyro and kind of a pro wrestling stage, and they decided to ditch that for a more traditional boxing look. I'm excited about the possibilities. I'm glad that they're allowing Strikeforce to still take place. A lot of people are thinking, well, then this just means Fedor is definitely going to fight in UFC, which is far from the truth. But I think that the comparisons of it being like the WWE buying out WCW, I think the reason some people made that comparison was because USC was starting to feel like a monopoly because they were snatching up all these promotions that went out of, you know, they snatched up the rights to Elite XE, they snatched up the rights to Affliction.
Pride.
They're going through and buying up libraries just the same way Vince did. So I think
it
naturally that comparison is going to take place, but you're right. To say it was the same thing is totally off base. I mean, there's never been at any point Strikeforce overtaking the UFC. I mean, they might have, you know, had, I mean, they had some very good broadcast television ratings, maybe not great compared to other sporting events on a Saturday night, but they had, you know, a lot of people watching their show and you know, at sometimes more people than watch UFC on cable, on Spike, but at no point are they, from a revenue standpoint, attendance, you know, overtaking the UFC, and I think that, I agree with you, I think that was kind of goofy to make that comparison.
Yeah, probably the bigger purchase for UFC was when they took over Pride, you know, that would have been.
Absolutely, that was huge, that was gigantic.
Yeah, I think you made a good point with you know, businesses being as usual. Scott Coker is still running Strikeforce. Dana White has been very clear that they're going to honor all the existing deals. All the contracts are still in place, which is very interesting because, it, you know, when I thought back to when WWF bought WCW, they picked up a lot of the smaller contracts, but the main event players, they really left those on the table. They let AOL, Time Warner, pay those out, but if they would have, at that time, if they would have honored, say, Diamond Dallas Page's contract, Ric Flair's contract, Goldberg's contract, Sting's contract, Lex Luger, Ric Flair, all those names that they didn't want to pay and they didn't want to buy them out, so, you know, you had the Hugh Morris's show up in WWE because they weren't going to pay, you know, the top dollar for some of those contracts, but maybe it would have been the better business decision to say, hey, if we're going to do that invasion as they did, what, a year later, if they would have had all those names at that time, and you know, Scott Steiner and Eric Bischoff, and would have brought them all in and honored those existing deals, that would have been very interesting. And, of course, I think the initial idea with Vince buying WCW is that he was going to keep it a separate entity as well, but just couldn't find a television home for WCW.
Yeah, that was the plan. I remember seeing stuff like Ticketmaster and, you know, the WCW shows and thinking, wow, and... And then Booker T and Buff Bagwell was, I think that was the match on Raw. And as soon as that happened, they went
bye Buff.
Yeah, bye bye Buff. And maybe we got to rethink this whole having it exist on its own kind of plan. So, and that was pre the brand split too. I mean, that was in a time when we still had the two shows, but. I think that's kind of why they went in that direction as opposed to, I mean, I think that might have been the original plan was kind of do what they were doing now and have WCW run live shows the same night as the WWE. But, you know, and we saw them attempt that with ECW, you know, doing a third set of live events, and that didn't do so hot. And, you know, you try things out, and, you know, hopefully the thing with Strikeforce works out, and you know, in a year or two we don't just see them close down, because I love having the option of it being on a Showtime. It was weird to see Dana White ringside, though, at the last one. It was just surreal. You just never thought you would see that. But kind of like when you saw Shane McMahon walking on a Nitro, you never thought you'd see Dana White on a Strikeforce show. But
I was just going to say that. Yep.
Stranger things have happened.
Yeah, and then lastly, tonight, of course, is a new episode of The Ultimate Fighter. It's been it's been a very lackluster season. I was telling Adam offline that one of the reasons I don't really like this particular season, you said the format, but I just, you know, watching Brock Lesnar out there, it's so obvious he didn't want to be there. And even though he did the press conferences and the media conference calls and said, I'm fine, I'm happy, but I don't know, you watch a show, Adam, you could tell he doesn't want to be there. And I think it really translates that way. And I just found this season just very uninteresting from a UFC product perspective.
Yeah, I've kind of in the last I want to say the last season that I was really into, I want to say it was about 2 years ago, the season that Kimbo Slice was on, that really intrigued me. Being someone who watched Kimbo, you know, get his start in MMA and kind of, you know, get the front cover of the ESPN magazine and not be in the UFC, man, it's crazy. And he had tons of attention, and that season of The Ultimate Fighter, that was the last one I really was into. I just feel like the concept of it, I would love to see them do another comebacks season. They did that, and I think it was season 4 they did that, where they had a bunch of UFC veterans or people who used to be in the UFC come back and try to get a contract again. I thought that was an awesome, you know, way to do that. And they have made efforts in the last couple of years to switch things up. They freshened up the look of the show a little bit. There was the whole "you got to fight your way onto the show" concept, which wasn't always in play. They would just pick a cast, and then the coaches would pick their teams, and that was it. Now you're piling a bunch of guys in and say, well, guess what? You got to fight your way onto the show. And I think that was kind of cool for a while, but the concept of the show is based off of a show that's back now called Tough Enough. I mean, and MMA fans hate it when you say that. I mean, I've said that around a couple of MMA fans, and they look at me like I'm stupid. And I have to say, well, where else did that kind of a show exist before Tough Enough? And then they go, well, okay. And they kind of have to reluctantly, because there's a large contention in that MMA crowd that used to be into pro wrestling that hate it now. Because those are the people, Steve, that I was referring to earlier that view pro wrestling as a sport. And that's probably why they've ditched pro wrestling, because they still look at it like it's a sport. And now they're into an actual sport, which is great, because I am too, but that's where I get my sports fix, is with MMA. But the Ultimate Fighter thing, you're right. Brock Lesnar looks like he has zero interest in being there. That's a show where I feel like Dana White has to sell a lot of those guys on to be coaches. I mean, I remember the season with Rampage and Rashad, where Rampage had zero desire to be a coach, and you could see it. He brought in his trainers, and his trainers did everything, and Rampage is kind of sitting there, you know, and not doing much. And then that makes him look stupid, and it kind of positions him. And you know, the season they did with GSP and Koscheck, I thought that was a pretty good season, but they definitely built that up. There was a lot of creative editing there to make Koscheck look like, you know, the big bad heel. He was kind of like the Ric Flair of that show, you know. Because if you went on Spike.com and you saw a lot of the off-air footage, he didn't look like a bad guy. But when they went into post-production and they made him look like a dick, you know, I mean, that's not that hard to do. You know, if you really want to make someone look, you know, like a bad person, you can do that. Creative editing. So I think that's another part of the show that I'm not a gigantic fan of, that they kind of make you look at somebody a certain way and kind of trick you in it. But I guess that's the whole point of reality television, though. They say it's reality, but a lot of it is, I would say about 50% of it is reality, and 50% of it is planned out. But you're totally on the money in saying that Brock doesn't look like he's into it. And then the worst part about it is that they're delaying these fights by, you know, 6-7 months, because they have to do the show, it has to air, it's a great tool to build up a fight and build up a feud, but at the same time, though, I mean, you're some guys are fighting once or twice a year because they're, you know, an Ultimate Fighter coach, and granted they're being paid to do the show, and that's great and everything, but I watched the first episode, and I went, you know what, I'm not interested, you know. So, I mean, the show is doing fine in ratings, you know, and people are still going to watch it, but I'm just I'm not really into it anymore.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. And, Adam, we've touched on a lot of topics tonight, and we do appreciate your time. We've probably gone over than what we probably originally thought we would have Adam on, but we had a great conversation. And, Adam, I guess, lastly, tell the GirlWick.net readers a little bit more at WrestleView, and talk about some of the shows and audio that you offer at WrestleView.com.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to do that. We on WrestleView, obviously, you know, Steve helps us out with reporting, on a daily basis on WrestleView. We have, news coverage every day. We have columns, we have results and things like that. But the big thing that we've been expanding, and we'll be celebrating 2 years of this thing in just a couple weeks on May 1st. Actually, when I look at my calendar, it's coming up in about 2 weeks now. And that is the WrestleView Radio Network and our VIP section. And what we do is, for $4.99 a month, we toss out a brand new show to you every single day, 7 days a week. On Mondays, we do a show called WrestleView Radio, which is kind of considered the quote-unquote flagship of the network, hence the name WrestleView Radio.
Pretty original there.
I know, pretty original. I know, we're pretty creative over here. On Mondays, we do WrestleView Radio right after Raw. We do the show live, and then we provide the archive if you missed the live broadcast, which unfortunately we weren't able to do this past week because my computer decided to freeze on me when I was about to save the show, so had to bite the bullet on that one. I was very upset about that, but thankfully our VIP members were very understanding for that. On Tuesdays, Hunter Golden, who is the managing editor of WrestleView, he does a show called the Bootlegs and B-Sides Show, where he just basically reviews old-school pro wrestling or answers mailbag questions or analyzes a big topic. This week he talked about the draft. On Wednesdays we have a show called Reality from Ringside Radio with Doug Lackey, who is a columnist for WrestleView. He's big on numbers, so he's a big analytical, data-heavy kind of guy. So if you're really into going back and looking at numbers and comparing and contrasting, you'll love the show with Doug. Thursdays we do another episode of WrestleView Radio. We give you two episodes of that show per week. On Fridays we do a show called the Friday Fishbowl that I host, where I bring in VIP members or people on the WrestleView staff. I got to get you on that show too, Steve. I think you'd have fun. It's just a goofy show where people send us questions and we just basically pull them out of a fishbowl, and whatever they ask us, we answer. So it's totally random, and whatever comes up, comes up. So it's kind of a impromptu show that doesn't require a lot of pre-production or anything like that. I just hit record and we start going. Then also on Fridays is a show called The Velvet Room with CJ Bowman, Nicholas Gray, and Greg McNeish. They come on after SmackDown and analyze that show. Saturdays we have a show called The Teacher's Lounge with Dave Stevens and Mr. V. They go over news of the week, and Mr. V does a column called From the Desk of Mr. V on WrestleView, where he's actually a teacher in real life. So on that show they give out detentions, they give out gold stars, and they have a lot of fun on that show. So that's a fun show to listen to. And then Sundays, if there's a pay-per-view, we're on live after WWE and TNA pay-per-views. And then Sunday, this is something I think is so unique to WrestleView. We have a show called the WrestleView International Desk, which is hosted by Evan O'Brien and Dara O'Connor. These guys are both from Ireland. They broadcast this show on Belfield FM, so it's actually a terrestrial radio show that we put up on WrestleView for free. And they kind of go over the news of the week and have guests on. They have a segment called The Hot Seat, where they bring on somebody and they go over topics. And it's just a really unique way of kind of covering wrestling. It kind of caps off the week, and then we start it all over again on Monday. So for $5 a month, you're getting a show every day, sometimes twice a day. We just have a lot of fun with it. It's kind of like we call it the WrestleView Radio Network. When we started, we didn't have that many shows, but over the course of the last 2 years, the thing has really grown, and you know, it's only $4.99, so if you just don't go buy a coffee at Starbucks or hold off on that Big Mac, you'll be able to afford a month's worth of shows. I think it's like close to 40 shows a month, so we have a fun time with it, and we do toss out free shows. We just had a free week over WrestleMania week that you can listen to if you listen to our shows, but we have a really fun time with it, and we'd love people to join us and check out the shows if you're interested.
Yeah, $4.99, it's almost like a gallon of gasoline anymore. So.
Oh, I know. It's getting ridiculous, though.
Yeah, but we want to thank Adam for coming on, and I also wanted to say, you know, Adam does a lot of the pay-per-view recaps on Gerwick.net, and, you know, I was going through, we of course, in August, we did the face change and gave it the new look, and I was moving over a lot of files. And if you go through the pay-per-view results going back a number of years to the WCW results, the TNA results, WWF, WWE, a lot of the archived pay-per-view results were written by Adam Martin. So if you enjoy his work, we still have a lot of his archived pay-per-view reports. And, of course, Adam, when he does his pay-per-view recaps, also puts up a file after the pay-per-view with the detailed list of all the matches. So we always appreciate him doing that. And as I said, if you're interested in going back and looking at some of the pay-per-views in 2007 and 2006, all those pay-per-view results that Adam wrote are still up at Gerwick.net. So definitely check those out. And as always, Adam, we always appreciate working with you, and it's always a good time talking to you here on the line.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show. I really appreciate it. I'm very excited that you brought back the podcast, because we were talking off the air that you had the Gerwick.net hotline, the toll-free number, and that was always fun to listen to, and I'm glad that you're jumping back in here and doing podcasts, and I'm very glad that you emailed me. I think I started doing that back in 2002, where you asked me, hey, can you toss up your pay-per-view results, because I started doing consistent coverage of WWE shows in 2002, and then I guess in 2004 with TNA, and I'm glad you did that, because now I kind of have my archive of all my work up there on Gerwick. So it's a good thing you did that, Steve, because I really do appreciate that, all the stuff you got up there. So thanks for doing that, and like I said, thanks for having me on the show, and we got to get you on more stuff on WrestleView too, because you're still part of the family over there as well.
Sounds good, and we'll definitely have you back here to do another podcast as well. We're looking forward to it.
All right. Well, Steve, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Adam, and we appreciate you listening and your support of Gerwick.net.